Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller. It's hard to believe that it's been 10 years ago now, 10 years ago since the Boston Marathon bombing. And, you know, there are people that that maybe don't remember a lot of the details about this, but there's a great new Netflix documentary, American Manhunt, the Boston Marathon bombing, that is streaming now. And we have Floyd Russ on here. He's the man that got this together, and he's done a lot of other great documentaries. Floyd, how are you?
Great. It's a great day. I'm so happy this is finally out today on Netflix. It's unbelievable that it's been 10 years. You're right.
It really
is in 3 days.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And this is a three-part docuseries, and you talk to a lot of the survivors of this. And just to kind of refresh everybody's memory on some of the details, this happened, I mean, it was supposed to be the happiest day in Boston. It's a great day for the marathon, and nobody saw this coming, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, in hindsight now, thinking, you know, it's the biggest event in Boston. It's a city holiday. The entire state and city shuts down. Everyone goes to the marathon or the Red Sox game. It's a barbecue kind of celebrate, you know, 2nd, 4th of July type of day,
right,
in Boston. And the especially the marathon, it's packed. And for these two brothers to go to the finish line and place these backpacks, in the middle of a crowd, trying to kill and hurt as many people as possible, it's unbelievable. You know, it's the stuff that it's written in horror stories, so to say. And when this happened, I think we all just kind of stopped what we were doing and couldn't believe it.
Yeah, and so it killed three people, including an 8-year-old. But it injured so many others. And, you know, we saw reports after these two terrorists one was killed and one was caught. And we saw reports for so long after that of all of the terrible injuries that these people had sustained, a lot of them losing limbs. And so these are the folks that you talked to for the docuseries?
Yeah. So, you know, for me, it's really important to view this as it's been 10 years, and there's a reason we're telling the story now. You know, hopefully there's enough time and distance
right
between people being able to look at this in a way that they're able to process what really happened and why it happened. So, you know, hey, it's called American Manhunt for a reason. This is what happened from that week when the bombs went off to when these guys were captured 101 hours later is the minute-by-minute retelling here. But there's so many lives and so much that, you know, went into this. It's survivors, it's first responders, it's investigative journalists, it's people that knew the bombers, and it's the FBI and the Boston PD, of course, as well. You know, every decision is analyzed in terms to what happened, why it happened. You know, that's what we wanted to do here in a really full retelling so that people hopefully are able to take away their own sense of closure, if that exists now, 10 years later.
Talking to Floyd Russ here in the National Defense Emmy Award winner behind the new three-part Netflix docuseries, American Manhunt, the Boston Marathon bombing, which starts streaming today. And Floyd, what did you come away with in terms of talking to some of these survivors? And I'm sure everyone is very individual in terms of how they're processing everything 10 years later. But was there a sense of maybe some closure in this situation for some of them?
I can only hope so. You know, it's definitely, you're right. Everybody's trauma is different, you know, especially the survivors. It's interesting to me, you know, when we talked to Karen McWaters, for example, who is a lady who lost her leg and her best friend at that finish line, but also her boyfriend, now husband, is a runner in the marathon. So the chaos that ensued for this entire family, you could say, in terms of mistaken identity, like missing somebody for 48 hours because the hospitals are so full, people don't have even wallets or cell phones on them. It's an insane angle to the story to hear her story. And then, you know, on the other side of the spectrum, you have the best friend of the bomber who had no idea that his friend would be capable of such a thing. And the trauma that he has is so different. You know, they're not at all on the same level in the sense of physical versus mental. But it's interesting to have all of that in one documentary.
Yeah, it's amazing, and the access that you have to all of these folks is great too. And you know, we talk about the terrorists behind the bombing, and one was killed at the scene. I think his brother actually drove over him with a car, right?
Yeah, the Watertown shootout was just, you know, one of the 4 days later, and I think most of America woke up the next morning reading the headlines, thinking, "Is this real? Like, this cannot be real." And, you know, hundreds of bullets flew, bombs were thrown on a residential street, and then at the end of it, you know, the younger brother runs over the older brother trying to get away.
It, were you able to talk to the other brother who's on death row right now, right?
Yeah, he's at Supermax in Colorado, so basically no contact with the outside world at all since he's been there. You know, we tried everything possible to even just get a letter or something like that, or sure, a statement, but completely unsuccessful. And that's the one thing that, you know, I wish we could include, but, you know, we reached as far as we could in terms of getting people that knew him, getting people that knew the older brother, getting people that, you know, were involved in that shootout, of course. The Danny Meng, who was hijacked the night before by the brothers, but was able to get away.
Oh, that's right.
They were trying to get to New York City with more bombs. That part of it, a lot of people even forget, although it's probably one of the most scary parts of the story.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, we covered and tried to cover everything we could, of course, but the one thing that nobody's able to is reach Jahar and Supermax.
Yeah, yeah, and when you talk to these law enforcement officers and FBI, is there any sense of, and I'm sure this happens in every single case, especially one as high profile as this, but in terms of looking back to say, why didn't we spot that? Why didn't we see that? We had, you know, we saw the bag on the ground. Why didn't we? Is there a lot of that? Did you get a lot of that from some of those folks?
You know, I think in terms of how we, so to say, police or view public events, it's definitely something that you can talk about. Like, you know, why aren't there metal detectors? Why aren't crowds checked? They are now, you know.
Right.
And the same goes for other events, of course, sporting events. You know, I mean, I don't want to talk about what's happening at schools, but it's
sure,
another thing. There's metal detectors at a lot of schools, right? But, you know, in hindsight, we can talk about this, and corrections are made, of course. But the biggest thing is more when we look at the history of the older brother. He was questioned before by the FBI years before. You know, some people don't know
right,
that.
Oh, that's right.
And also, there was a murder that happened, you know, a few years before, where his best friend was murdered. You know, now everyone's kind of saying the older brother probably committed this murder, but that's an open case. So, you know, conjecture, of course. But that part of the gray history of the older brother. And could it this been prevented? That's definitely a question we ask in the documentary.
And wasn't this also in, I think the excuse was, it was in retaliation for what was happening in Afghanistan?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the radicalization factor of how these guys were radicalized. Is there somebody that radicalized them? You know, it was harrowing in the sense of, like, there's no terrorist group that came forward and took responsibility for the theft of the bombing, right?
Right.
Which, it's interesting because the FBI then right away goes, like, that's not normal for a bombing.
Right.
You know, so now you are looking at, like, is this homegrown terrorism? What type is it? And the type of homegrown terrorism this is, you know, I don't want to give it away, but you've got two immigrants, you know, immigrants that came here. One of them was 9 when he came here. The other one was 17, two teenagers, so to say. And then 10 years later, after living in Boston already for a long time, you know, they kind of become radicalized while living here. And they are, in a way, self-radicalized, but they're Muslim, you know, they are. And they kind of start, you know, using reasons that, as if they are from the Middle East. But these two guys have never even been to the Middle East. You know?
Wow.
So it's
wow,
very interesting in terms of why would they all of a sudden,
right,
so to say, turn against the country they live in. And, you know, you mentioned it, like, Jahar being at Supermax, and he went on trial, and he pled not guilty. He said that his older brother influenced him, trying to, you know, get a smaller sentence. Of course, that was,
sure,
of course, didn't work, and he's now on death row again. But it's unbelievable to think it's a 19-year-old kid going to college in Boston who had good grades and was popular would do such a thing. You know, the older brothers, in a way, it's a case by case story. You cannot just group these two guys together. But we look at both of their paths, trying to make sense of why would they do this.
So tragic and so interesting. Floyd, thank you so much for bringing this, the new 3-part Netflix docuseries, American Manhunt, the Boston Marathon Bombing, streaming now on Netflix. Floyd, thank you so much, man. We really appreciate the time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Check it out on Netflix.
We'll be right back here on the National Defense.